You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, I'm Brett.
And I'm Steven.
And we are
the Broadway Husbands.
We're an all-American married couple making their living in the arts and pursuing a growing family. On the Broadway Husbands podcast, we offer advice from our ordinary lives under extraordinary circumstances.
We are living proof that you can love who you love and love what you do. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss our weekly episodes. And if you really love us, make sure you leave a review on whatever platform you listen to us on. Take a screenshot and tag us on Instagram at Broadway Husbands.
We are proud members of the Broadway Podcast Network. Make sure you check out broadwaypodcastnetwork.com/husbands to see all the amazing things they're doing for our community at this time.
And who are our guests today?
Well, a very dear friend of mine from Wicked, Alexandra Billings, and her wife, Chris Ann Blankenship.
Yay! Welcome to the show.
Hi, kids.
Hello.
How's every little thing?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
How are you both? Well, actually, tell our audience, if they don't know who you are, if they've been living under a rock, who are you both individually? And we'll talk a little bit about how you met and who you are together as a couple.
Who are we?
Well, she is an award-winning actress.
Are we going to talk about each other?
Yes.
I love it.
Who's been
in
theater for the past X amount of years, many, many years, and has also been a co-star, featured performer, whatever, in TV shows. Most recently, Disney's Diary of a Female President.
Great.
I know.
Going so great.
You probably also know her from Transparent or Goliath, and she's been in theaters across the country, most notably in Steppenwolf in Chicago, and most recently as the witch, not witch,
remember witch?
Yeah,
Madame Morrible.
A witch in Wicked, and the musical Wicked that's on Broadway, and she's my wife and my longtime friend, and just we've known each other for centuries and love. Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Well said.
Well said.
That's the greatest introduction I think I've ever gotten in my life.
I'm just Chrissy.
No. You never tell people your whole bio. So this is actually, I'm glad that you did this. My wife is a celebrated and critically acclaimed director from Chicago, Illinois, where she was the first female managing director of a major non-equity theater in Chicago. She also was a managing director and artistic director of Push Studios, also in Chicago, for a few years. She started two of her own theatrical companies, one of which I think is still running. Borealis might still be running. That might be true.
Yeah.
She's a producer. She and I have both written an original musical called Dracula, the musical. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's right.
It's a
We wrote it. And she wrote the lyrics and I wrote the music. And the book. We both wrote the book, really. Oh, did I? I don't remember. And we met in 1976 at Schaumburg High School in our drama club. And we were married in 1996. Is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she is my spouse and my protector and my safe place to land. And she was the one that got me out of New York City when I was in Wicked, when the zombie apocalypse hit and everybody was caught. And my wife called and said, "You're getting on a plane." I went, "Honey, I can't. I have a contract and a Broadway show. Get on a plane." I said, "No, listen, everything's fine. It's going to be up." She said, "If you don't." And when that tone happens, then I just do it. And literally, I got, this is true, I got here to the California, and 48 hours later, every single road, airplane, road, bus, train out of New York City was canceled, and everyone was trapped except me, because I married up.
What a good bio. I like that one too. Yeah. Okay, so you met in high school, but
back at Schoenberg High School. So tell us about who had eyes for who first, and what was your relationship then? Like, you know.
Well, we actually played brother and sister in a Shakespeare play, Twelfth Night. Alex, at that point, taught me the fine art of impersonation, fine art of impersonation, because we were twins. We had to play twins. So we developed similar gestures and the way we talked, et cetera, et cetera. So we started out as very, very close, you know, not just friends, but we used to go around to different parts of the city and order drinks and tell people that we were brother and sister or sister and sister after a while. So we recognized each other, I think, very shortly after, you know, we met. So we've always been. How's that?
Yes, that was good. It was very good. Okay, nice work.
You were always in cahoots, is what you're it always sounds like.
Cahoots. Yes. We do tend to go on the same track. We're not always, though, at the same speed.
Or the same station.
But we are definitely on
the same track.
On the same.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah, I love that.
That's actually really true.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to stop talking now and drink my coffee because I need to have more coffee. Listen, can people see us?
Please no, no us it'll just be it'll just be voice.
I would have dressed differently.
No, she would not have. That's a lie.
Well, I would have put on my
you wouldn't have put on socks. Anything. No, you wouldn't have.
Yeah, no, you would not.
Oh, you don't think you're fooling.
Wow. Press on.
Wait, so then who on that path said I love you first? Do you remember?
Do you remember?
Well, I asked you to marry me first.
Oh, yes, but that's a different statement.
Who said I love you first? Well, no, actually, you just recently discovered. I think Alex said it first. Recently, we discovered behind, because I tend to take talismans, especially written statements of things, and put them behind photographs, because I think that our niece and nephews and our cousins, when we pass, are going to find these things and go, oh, this is so sweet. So one of the things was a note that Alex wrote to me for a Christmas gift. Which we just recently found one of those things. And it basically said, I love you. It said, we've been together for centuries. That's and right. You have my heart and I will never leave you, which he shortly thereafter did. And
here we go.
This
story.
It was fabulous. It was great at the time. I mean, it was great.
I love that you constantly make talismans for us when we're dead. Like, that's what you think. Let's save this, because this is when we die, people are going to want to know that this fishy thing existed in our lives. I'm like, can't we have things now? Can't we have nice things?
Yes.
Oh, really? Can't we have nice
things? We do have nice things. Okay.
You've shown me some of your talisman. I like that one you got at Disneyland.
The masks.
The masks, yeah.
That was a good one.
And let me tell you something. There was nothing else like it in that shop.
Yeah.
All of the rest of them were typical masks. And this was this was unique in a variety of ways, but certainly, you know, the form was incredibly unique. Yeah.
I love that.
I mean, not
okay. So then you said you proposed. Tell us about the
proposal. I proposed first.
Tell us about that. What was that?
Yeah, honey, tell us about that.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Yeah, that's.
Well, tell him about that. Tell him. Go ahead. Tell him. It's an embarrassing story.
So, embarrassing for her.
Well, tell him.
What? Can you imagine? This is what it's like to be married to me.
So my story is embarrassing. I think it's much more romantic the way Alex asked me to marry her. So you should.
Is that the story you're going to tell?
No, that's the story.
I have to tell the way you proposed. Okay.
No. You're going to tell.
I'm going to tell the way I proposed yesterday.
Well,
I proposed after.
Beautiful.
I mean,
we had a fight.
We did?
Oh God, yeah. You know, all pre-married couples have a fight.
We did?
Yes, of course. We had a fight. And then go ahead. And then you took me out.
Well, now I don't remember.
Oh my God. Well, I don't remember what we fought about, but then she took me out very sweetly. And
well, we went to one of our favorite restaurants, which was called King Crab. I don't know if that's still there. It's in Chicago. And I proposed to her over dinner. And we ordered our favorite meal. Well, she ordered her favorite meal. I ordered my favorite meal because I don't like seafood, but I like fried beans. And if you go to the seafood, they fry stuff. You tell them, put it in the fryer. So we did that. And then I proposed. And I think I gave you flowers.
It's possible. Yes, probably. Probably.
Yeah, it was a dinner. And I asked her to marry me. And she said, yeah.
It was beautiful. It was lovely. It was great. Yeah.
Tell them how you proposed.
I'm so not. Listen, if we ever do a biographical.
Why don't you want to tell them?
Because I don't want to.
Okay.
If we ever do a biographical, documentary on me, then I'll tell people.
What is this?
Oh dear.
Without going into
my story to tell,
and without going into
detail. Okay.
We were in an intimate situation, and she proposed to me.
Okay, there we go. That's it. There you go.
Okay.
And it was a quick yes.
And you said yes.
It was a very quick yes. Literally, she asked me, and the way she asked me was hilarious because she didn't really ask me. She said, I don't know if you remember this.
I do.
She said, what would you say if, and I was like, that's my proposal.
No. Oh, no, she is not remembering correctly.
That's exactly
I said, I didn't ask.
That's what she said.
I said, marry me. I didn't even ask her. I just demanded.
I love what you remember.
Yeah. Marry me. And she said yes.
And how do you remember it, Alexandra?
She said, what would you say if? Because she was so frightened. She did not think I was going to say yes, which you told me later.
In the moment, I definitely was not frightened. That was not. Or no, you were not scared.
You were scared that I was going to say no.
No. Like I say, in the moment. Yeah. It was not there. That was not the emotion that was coursing through me.
Okay.
There we are.
So then you got married. Tell us about the wedding.
Oh, the wedding. The wedding was beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. It was. It was. It was. She doesn't remember it. But it was. Do you?
We have a video of it.
Do you remember?
I remember.
No, I know. She has no idea. Not a clue. No, you don't have a memory thing. That's untrue. So the day was amazing, and we had about a hundred. Remember, this was a very long time ago. This was almost 24 years ago.
96.
So this was a time when it was illegal, when gay marriage was illegal. We were married in Chicago at a theater. In a theater called the Bailiwick Theater. And everyone that we invited, and we invited about 150 people, assumed it was a performance. They didn't think we were actually getting married because no one was getting married. It just, that was insane. So people came and thought this, and were like coming backstage and wishing me like break a leg. And I'm like, in my marriage, I don't know what you're telling me. But the ceremony itself was amazing. We had two reverends, a male and a female, that married us both.
Both good friends of ours.
Both good friends and both actors.
Yeah, both actors.
You had six best men. Is that right? And one bridesmaid.
Not six. I think it was more like four and one bridesmaid. I had my maid of honor, matron of honor, and four.
Was it four?
Yeah, four groomsmen.
That's pretty big. That's big.
It was a bit. We didn't mess around.
And you had
I had all bridesmaids except one groomsman,
right.
Michael.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And singers.
We had a half a dozen singers.
Yeah.
And the ceremony itself was really done by Chris Ann, and she wove in a lot of different cultures. We had a Native American. We had a little Jewish ceremony partly. We had a spiritual moment. We had a little, I don't know about Christianity, but we had a lot of different, that was really her job. And my job was the music. Hooray. So literally it was a giant musical because every 5 minutes somebody would stand up and sing something from Showboat. So it was a giant musical. My parents, my mother boycotted our wedding. Said, I'm not coming because I don't know what you're doing and it's upsetting. And my father pretended he was sick. So my parents were not there, which was very disheartening to me. Chris Ann's parents, however, were both there, as well as her brother.
Who was one of my groomsmen.
Right,
was one of your groomsmen. One of my groomsmen.
So we had parents there, and they sort of represented both sides. Now, I also had my good friend Chili Pepper, who sort of stood in for my mother. Mm-hmm. She's a performer at the Baton, where I performed for 5 years. And I had my best friend Kelly there, and my best friend Honey West sang, and Michael. It was beautiful. And there was one moment that Chris Ann had designed where we were supposed to get this big loaf, bunches of loaves of bread to hand out to the entire audience. And everybody was going to take a little thing and you ate and you passed it along and we were all going to be family.
And that was the only thing I was responsible for.
She had one job.
One job.
And I said to everyone, which I always say at the beginning of every show, something's going to go wrong. Something terrible is going to happen. Everybody needs to know it. Once the terrible thing happens, then we can all relax and enjoy the rest of the blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I say that in every class. I say that in every situation I say that in. We just did this gay live parade thing, and I said that. I said something horrible is going to happen, and it did, and everything was fine. So wedding is going on, and we're sitting in this big, beautiful chaise lounge while all kinds of fabulous accoutrement is falling and happening around us. And all of a sudden, one of the reverends says, and now we'd like to break bread with our... And Chris Ann does this to me only. And I go under my breath, you forgot the frickin' bread, didn't you? She nods. All of a sudden, one of our friends, Andrew, who's up in the sound booth running the lights. Sorry, honey. Who's up in the sound booth running the lights. He gets word somehow. Oh, we tell him we don't have any bread. So he leaves the theater. He runs across the street to a bagel shop and gets, because it was the only place it was open. I think it was a Sunday. And we're all sort of sitting, we're vamping till ready. And he's running. He gets like, I don't know, six bagels, maybe?
Oh, a bagel.
A bagel. And comes for 150 people.
Right.
And just, and kind of like, whoosh, shoves it in our face. And we take a little and we give it to the 150.
Well, we gave it to the parents. We gave it to our parents and to like the first, we gave it to Chili, I hope. And, you know, gave it to the front row.
Right.
However long it lasted.
But the wedding itself was beautiful. And we got married and. That was my wedding. Even when we got married again for legal sake, that was my marriage. I was already married.
So. Right. Wow. That's so fun. Congratulations.
Thanks, Kat.
Thank you.
No. So you want to ask this question?
Yeah. You know, Alexandra, I think that you are so inspiring. I've only met you, I think this is like my second time really like talking to you. But just everything that I know about you and hear about you is like just super inspiring. So I think I want to know, like, what, like how in your life have you found hope and belief when life feels hopeless? Like, what is like maybe one saying that's gotten you to get up on your feet and get going? Or like a prayer?
Yes. I love what you're asking. And thank you for what you said. I appreciate that. The answer to your question is in your question, because I don't ever feel hopeless, ever. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what's going on around me or to me. I don't ever feel hopeless. Now, when I was diagnosed with AIDS back at a time when everyone was dying, what I lost was not my hope. What I lost was my faith. Because I didn't believe I had any foundation underneath me, because that's what I saw, because I buried all of my friends in the early 80s. And that's what the scientists and doctors told me: you're going to die in a matter of minutes. And so I really crawled up inside myself. And as I said before, I married up. And Chris Ann stood around for, I think, a couple of days and allowed me to feel very sorry for myself, which I think I was allowed to. And then came in to the bedroom and said, okay, look, here's the thing. If you're going to curl up into a little ball and die, that's your choice. But I'm not going to stand here and watch you do it. And although that didn't restore my faith, that took work. Faith takes work. Just like kindness takes work. It's an active study and practice. It's not something that anybody can be nice. Cats and dogs are nice, but you have to activate kindness. Hope never leaves. So when she said that to me, what it was a reminder, because what she said was, look, you can absolutely pay attention to your sorrow and your sadness, or you can pay attention to health and wellness. So it's really just about where your attention is. So I turned my attention away from my temporary loss of faith, and I turned it towards hope. What you're asking is you know, and I get it, but what you're asking for is a panacea. You're asking for a lucky charm, really. It's what we all want. What is the thing that do that keeps you going? There is nothing that I do that keeps me going. Look, we're in the middle of a giant viral pandemic, and a second one that we've gone through, our generation, and also another massive spiritual revolution, global. This isn't just like in this city, this is global. So the world itself is birthing a newness. There's no such thing as a thing that's going to get us through it. That's not going to happen. Everybody's pain and loss is different. So I can't give you a thing. The only thing I can tell you is, for me, it all depends on what I pay attention to. I pay attention to my loss, then my loss takes up space, which is fine. If I pay attention to my sadness, then my sadness takes up space. But if I pay attention to my hope, my rage, and my faith, I'm in good hands.
Wow.
Love that. What would you say to that person now? If you were in the room with the person who you're with, Chris Ann, and you're looking at who you were at that time, who had lost their faith, what would you say to them to get them through that?
I think I might say kind of the same thing that Chris Ann said to me. Really, you can do whatever you need to do, but I'm not going to stand here and watch you waste away. I'm going to go over here until you're done, but I can't look at it. But you can do whatever you need to do. Look, I tell people this on social media all the time. I just spoke to a very, very dear friend of mine. She's a white lady of a certain age. And she said to me, Alex, I'm a trans person of color. So she said to me, Alex, I have no idea what to say. Like, I literally don't know. I don't know how to be anymore. These are her exact words. I don't know how to be. If I say something, it's wrong. If I don't say something, it's wrong. If I march, it's wrong. If I don't march, it's wrong. If I say I'm going to march, but she goes, mm-hmm. I don't know how to be as a white person in this country. I don't know how to be. And I said, Shannon, that's exactly what we want to hear. That's it. That's the golden ticket, my friend. Because that is how the marginalized has felt. That's how I felt my whole life on the outside of every single party. Every single party, let me just say, including Black Lives Matter. I'm not in that party. I'm not invited to that party. So my whole philosophy revolves around saying to other people, look, if you need to say, I'm going to post videos of Liza Minnelli at Radio City because it's a really great concert and she's excellent in it. I just watched it. It's really good. You should watch it if you haven't. Then that's what you need to do. And if you want to post videos of Maya Angelou, and if you want to post videos of Martin Luther King or Malcolm X or Lady Gaga or Lena Horne or yourself or your parents or your African-American friends or whatever you want to post in order to be in the center of your revolution, that's what you should do. That's my advice. Do the thing you need to do. Self-care is just as revolutionary as activism.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Why do you think, I know when Wicked announced you were coming into the show and they gave so much, part of the press is always, you were the first trans actor to step into a role in Wicked, visible, like who's openly trans. So why is it important to be open about that in when you're announcing, coming into a show or something like that? Why for you is it important to lead with that?
Well, again, the answer to your question isn't your question because of what you just said, because I'm not the first trans person in Wicked.
Right.
Wicked has been going on for how many, 16 years now? Mm-hmm. It's had, I'm guessing, thousands of actors in it. And if you can't count the orchestra, hundreds of thousands, probably. Mm-hmm. You think I'm the first transgender person involved in this show? No, of course not. I'm the first open transgender person. So that's why it's important, because it's absolutely ridiculous that all of those trans people, and there's some in our cast right now that are still living in stealth because they're filled with shame and terror. So the fact that I'm open and loud and take up space, hopefully, opens those doors, because it doesn't make any sense. It's ridiculous that we live in a time right now where there are people still silent about what they are.
And, and that's part of what this moment, hopefully movement, is getting to the point where we no longer ask those questions, you know, that, or we no longer have to say first transgender, first black person, first Asian, first, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That we no longer have to say or highlight that, and it's not a color blindness. I'm not suggesting color blindness. What I'm suggesting is the family of humanity. Whether you like it or not, my Southern brethren, we come out of the Rift Valley in Africa, and we have we have a couple of sets of DNA in us, all of us, and that's what people are taking to the streets for. And it basically, it's every time people take to the streets is to say, it's ridiculous to be marginalized, and I will no longer do it because you, the white power hierarchy, you're no different. You'd like to think you are, but you are not. If I cut my chest open, and my very dear friend Michael cuts his chest open, believe me, the color of the blood is going to be the same. Mm-hmm. So are the arrangements of the internal organs. So is the weight of the brain. It's to me, it's almost like gender as well. It's so ridiculous that you have to find that white people, myself, have to find a way to differentiate ourselves. There is no difference, folks. There's just none. There's no difference. Go listen. The world is being destroyed around us. We, by 2035, we're going to be in a heck of a way with our climate, with the destruction that's going on to species, to ourselves. We're going to be in a heck of a way. So enough with the crap. Yeah. Enough with the crap. Let's really focus as a family on our home.
Amen.
Yeah.
Well said.
This is beautiful.
What a blessing you both are to our lives this year. Thank you for that.
Thank you for giving us this platform and inviting us in.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
So, okay, we're going to change gears a little bit. I know you both work together on projects. You have a production company. Yes,
you're Schmangy writing Incorporated.
Schmangy.
Schmangy.
Correct.
Schmangy.
Schmangy. It's spelled S C H M E N G I E. It has a C in it.
And it's Schmangy. Encompassing. It encompasses. It's an encompassing word. Compass. We're all together in it.
I love that. Schmangy. Schmangy. So what is it like for you to work together on projects? How do you?
Oh my God, I hate it.
Horrible. Really, it's like a worse. Have you ever had your fingernails pulled out one by one?
It's like my finger in a light socket constantly.
Bad. Or circumcision. Wow. It's a lot like circumcision.
Well, I wouldn't know. No, you would not. I would not know that.
Not know that.
No, I'm sorry. Or I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry.
I wouldn't be sorry. I would not be sorry.
It's like the best thing in the world. It's like, I think, when it's like the best thing in the world. It's also like the worst thing in the world. We both have egos.
I don't.
No. Both have egos, pressing on. The lucky thing or the divine thing or whatever you want to call it is that we agree what the need is. We agree that marginalized, otherized communities are the stories that we want to tell. That's what we agree on. Now, we don't often agree on timing. Like, I want to have things done today. And sometimes Alex wants to say, you know, I'm just going to sit on that for a while.
Tomorrow's fine.
So, but we never, ever disagree on the stories that we want to
tell. As you guys both know, trying to get me on this thing took, you know, a year and a half. I mean, I just, but this is why I have people in my life. You know, I
like
have
me.
Like my wife and assistants and managers and people like that, because otherwise, really, I would just watch Liza and Judy pretty much all day, every day. So
Billy, can we shout out to you, Billy?
Billy Miller.
Billy, thank we're God. Shouting out to Bonnie. We're shouting
Bonnie,
out to Bonnie. Eric, we shout out
These
to.
These are all people who make sure that I brush my teeth and dress.
God bless them.
Oh, God bless them. Universe, goddess.
Yeah, listen.
Whoever you want to pray to.
Getting me to New
York. Or not pray to.
Right. Getting me to New York to do the Wicked took a village, because I just don't travel. I'm not drip dry. I don't travel well, darling. I need things, and I don't really, So it's a lot. So that's where we differ, because she's analytical. She's linear. She understands the thing. She can go from A to Z. It makes perfect sense to her. And this is kind of how I teach and how I've lived my life. I'm completely nonlinear. Everything that's fantasy and make-believe makes perfect sense in reality. Stupid, I hate it. And I make up my own rules all the time, no matter, even if somebody goes, listen, here's the contract. And I'm like, I have to go now. So I just fucking leave. So, yeah. So that's where things get mushy and weird. But the great thing is we both realize both of those things are gifts. And so I try really hard to listen and go, all right, what is she saying? And how is this going to make this project bigger and reach more people? And so I try to do that.
And I don't know whether you guys know the movie. Oh, shoot. The Cottage.
Enchanted Cottage?
The Enchanted Cottage. I don't know if you guys, but everybody needs to watch it.
They don't not look.
No. But you need to watch. Go find it. The Enchanted Cottage.
Who's in it?
Dorothy McGuire and Robert Young. Listen to what I'm saying to you. This movie, first of all, it's not very well. I'm so glad you brought this up. It's not very well known. It is a beautiful,
romantic
fairy tale. The Enchanted Cottage. Watch it tonight.
We will.
But that is what I get to come home to then every day, is the Enchanted Cottage. So that to me is, I mean, it's life affirming and it's restful, and I get to step away from the reality of what's going on outside and the job and whatever. So it's a fantastic balance.
Nice.
Somebody said to me today, I was posting some stuff on Instagram, and somebody said, do you know, because people love to tell me what to do my whole life. Do you know, Alex? Yeah. Do you know, Alex, you really should be posting things about things that matter. They're not these silly. You should be posting things that matter politically. And I said, I did. Did you not see the video of Lena Horne? Hello.
Exactly. Exactly.
Hello.
Jesus.
So that's what I did.
Art is a political statement. It is. It's a humanity. Word. It's humanity.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, we're gonna bring you into a segment that we call Spotlight on Love.
You get to answer.
What?
You both have to answer.
I'm not giving out advice.
You're not giving out advice?
No,
you do it all the time.
You say that now, and then you're going to ask the question, and you're going to be like, okay, I got something to say.
Just ask the question. She'll chime in.
So what we do in this segment is one of our listeners writes in with a question or a situation that they want completely unqualified advice from us and our guests on the podcast. And so we had a listener named Jay write in, and he said, you want to read it?
Yeah. He says, my current partner is still best friends with their ex. I feel really insecure about their relationship. what can I do to be supportive and feel comfortable at the same time?
Do you want to answer that? That's kind of up your alley. I know you got it. That's going, that's something's happening in your brain.
Sure.
What do you want to say?
How you been?
Okay. They're best friends. Now I have to go over it again because it's a story.
So his current partner is still friends with his ex, with their ex. And he feels insecure about the relationship. So like, what can he do to be supportive yet still feel like not jealous and I guess insecure about it?
I would say exactly. That's what I was going to say. They have to talk. They have to say it to each other. They have to say, and very clearly, I'm jealous of, you know, Frank. I don't like it. It makes me feel icky when you see him. Now, I'm not saying don't see him, but I am saying that it feels really weird. And it's something I have to work on. And I would say, you know, because we're talking about trust, right? Because that jealousy comes from, God, I really sound like I know what I'm talking about. Oh, my Lord.
Unqualified.
This is unqualified. Although we have been through years of therapy.
It is, my darling. Absolutely is.
Years. So
I have a half by now, but never mind.
That's right. You'd think we'd stop going. I would say yes. Say it, first of all. Say it to each other. Also, I would ask, this is something I would actually ask you. I would say, why do you feel the need to have this person in your life? What gifts are they actually bringing you? And I need to know this, first of all, because I'm your spouse. And second of all, because I am feeling weird about it. But if this is something you need, something you desire and want in your life, and it fills you up, then yeah, I would say, go do it. Just be honest with each other.
I think I'd also add that being included in the two of them is probably also very important. That if this truly is a friendship, then let's make it a three-way friendship. You know, let's all get to know one another. Let's all let's make it a three-way friendship.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that kind of actually, it's so funny because married couples tend to hang out with other married couples, and then it's or just couples, and they lose their single friends. And that's one way to get around it is, you know, there's three of us in this relationship. It's not just two of us. Alex is a wonderful best friend, Honey West, and I love Honey. I love hanging out with her. She knows I love her. I'm pretty sure she loves me, you know. But I'm not in constant contact with her, but because I know that Honey feeds something in Alex. But I'm always included, if I want to be. That's not a problem. So I also think that that's a major part of it.
That's a good thing. Yeah.
Well, also, it'll actually, I think that's really a good question, good suggestion too, in that maybe that will make his partner question why, like, what if I don't want to hang out with him with both of us, then why am I hanging out with him at all?
The motives are a little off.
Some self-evaluation is probably needed, especially if I always feel like if there are lovers in your life or friends and they become estranged from you and then they come back, my big question is why? Because what has changed? What is different? What gifts are they bringing into the relationship? Because when you're married, you go as a twosome, period, no matter what happens.
I
agree.
I like the inclusive three-way friendship idea. I think that's so healthy. I feel like that is like the healthiest answer. Like it's awesome advice. Yeah.
Really good.
I like that.
Good advice.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. We'll get you a cup of get you a cup of good Joe.
You can't just say thank you.
Well, we want to thank you both for being on our podcast. Where can people follow you if you're online, social media? Where's Schmangi at? Let us.
Well, they can come to our house. I'll give you our address. they can find me, because, you know, I'm all over the social need.
Yeah, you nailed it.
I'm addicted, as you know, Brett, to the Instagram. Addicted.
Same.
So you can find me, Ina. So you can find me on the Instagram, the real Alexandra Billings, because apparently there's a lot of Alexandra Billings. Odd.
Yeah.
So the real Alexandra Billings on Instagram. And then also I am also on Facebook. I have a professional page because I'm professional. And I also have a personal page because I'm personal. And then Schmengi also has two pages, Schmengi Inc. on Instagram and Schmengi Inc. on Facebook. So I don't do the Twitter because it's too mean. So I'm only on Instagram and Facebook.
Well, we will put links to all of that in the show notes so people can come follow you and
wonderful.
Find you.
Thank you.
And we are so grateful to both of you. Thank you for being guests on the show.
So
we love you. We're sending so much love to you.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm going to take a picture to remember this moment in time.
Right back at
it. Oh, God. What do we look like?
I don't even know what it looks like.
All of our dead relatives. This was one, two, three, four.
Yay!
What did that even mean? 1, 2, 3, 4.
I don't know. I didn't know what she's talking about.
And to all of our listeners, don't forget to love who you love
and love what you do.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.